call the special Senate Budget Committee to order here this fine day, August 23rd, year of our Lord, 2003. We'll start this exciting agenda with a Senate joint resolution, and then we'll get into House Bill 5077 to provide the climactic denouement that we need to have for this great legislative session in the august body you have before you. And we'll start with staff on Senate Joint Resolution 34, work session.
Mr. Chair, you have before you SJR 34, and then you have SJR 34-3 amendments. What the SJR 34 does is there's a preamble referring to the fiscal condition of the state and pointing out the weaknesses in the state's current tax structure. It then calls on the legislature to call itself into session, into a special session, to act upon a tax reform plan. It lays out, it sets a date in the Dash 3 amendments for May 31st, 2004 for that special session. Prior to that, it establishes a joint interim committee on tax reform, which would have a total of 20 members. And that interim committee is to make recommendations on tax reform proposals, and it has the authority as an interim committee to pre-session file any proposals that would be prepared for the May 2004 special session. It does direct the Legislative Revenue Office to provide staff for the committee's work.
Any questions or discussion for staff on this particular?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Can you talk about the date change, November to May?
Sure.
Thank you.
Quite possibly this, despite its small stature and nature, is one of the more meaningful pieces of legislation I think will have come out of this legislative session. A lot of controversy about how Oregon's current tax structure has let this state down in a big, big, big way. I think that's almost universally understood. And then the question has become, well, what can we do to make it better? And the way to go about that, frankly, is to have an informed discussion. We've had work groups, as you know. You've been a strong proponent, Senator, as have many on this committee, to do something a little bit better. And the question is, well, when and how, given the tremendous burden we've had this session trying to deal with just getting through the next biennium up front. And originally there was an interest in moving rapidly with this November so that we could get it this early in the interim. That was before we approached September for our regular session. I think there's a desire on many individuals' parts to take a breather, frankly, from this so we can have an intelligent, informed discussion and engage those people that are sitting in the audience and those people sitting at home in a thoughtful discussion. As you know, based on the revenue package that we put forward the other day that has passed both the Senate and the House, there's interest in a campaign both for and against that package that will occur over the next 4 or 5 months with its climax coming in February. So as to not confuse issues, frankly, so as to not undermine anyone's opportunity to have a free and intelligent discussion on that, it was decided we should wait till after February, because I was also considering a January date. And then, frankly, we do have a primary coming up. I know there's a lot of our colleagues that are intensely interested in the outcome of those primaries. I think that this sort of issue will not get the necessary attention as we focus on that. So quite honestly, we were left with the earliest possible date for informed discussion would be May 31st. You go much beyond that, then it becomes extremely difficult to have a campaign on this particular issue, and also very, very difficult for this to take effect January 2005, which would be, you know, my ideal scenario. So that is how we got to the May date.
I appreciate that. I certainly will support the resolution, and also want to commend and acknowledge your leadership in bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Winters.
Go ahead. I'll yield.
Senator Harper, excuse me.
Harper. Kurt, the governor has stated many times he's against this concept. Has he changed his mind?
I have not heard the governor say that he's against tax reform.
He's against the doing it in this process, in this manner, is what I mean.
Quite frankly, it's a little difficult for me to fully understand exactly where the governor is on this particular issue. I think he had indicated he was concerned about the legislature doing something in this session. My goal, as part of having this later date, would be that we would be able to engage the governor in some of his public outreach, I think, that he was very interested in. And part of the reason for having a date later was to see if we could not incorporate our ideas with his ideas. And I'll state up front here, I think it is the constitutional duty of this legislature, not anyone else, to stand up and focus this discussion. The legislature is, frankly, the body that is charged with developing the laws of this great state, not the governor's office, nor the judicial branch. I think the ultimate arbiter will, of course, be the people, and I hope that will be worked into whatever format we come up with. But it is our responsibility. That is the reason we are here, is to make decisions. There are those that would like us just to be a judge and jury of what others have us do, but I think it is our responsibility, both for and against this particular resolution, to present this to the public and say, hey, our system is broken, it's seriously flawed, and we need to do things better. And then have them decide if they agree with us or not.
Okay, so we don't know where he stands on this particular
issue. I do not, sir.
Okay.
Senator Winter.
Just a comment. Just the other day at the Bush rally and the Bush lunch, a business owner from Portland was very concerned about what's happening in Oregon and businesses moving, in this case, across the river to Clark County. And I do think we have to have a discussion. We are losing businesses. And we know if we don't have businesses, we don't generate dollars, we don't have jobs. And as long as the debate and discussion is talking about how we're going to be able to compete with the other 49 states, how are we going to be able to make certain that we have a system that allows businesses in Oregon to remain and to flourish, those to remain here as well as those new ones to come here? I think it's a discussion that truly we need to have. We are not an island unto ourselves, and I'm reminded of that. And sometimes our taxes, our tax structure is not as favorable as we would like, particularly when we look at the amount of businesses that are leaving. And we need to ask ourselves that fundamental question of why. And it's not just, I think, the educational piece. And we've heard a lot of testimony that if our educational system is not at high tech, I think it's far more than that. I think taxes play a big role in why we're not able to keep businesses in Oregon. And if they're going to find a place that will treat them better, they will go there. I do really truly believe that we need the discussion. We need to make certain that we are retaining our businesses here and that we're able to attract new businesses into Oregon. So I just needed to put that on the record because this individual was really thinking very seriously about joining some of his colleagues and moving across the river to Clark County, where he says there are favorable conditions and his bottom line is a little better than his bottom line here is in the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Senator. Further comments? Senator George, please.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's hardly any of the whereases in this bill that I would even agree with, but particularly lines 8 and 9, to me, provide what I would consider a brand new view of what the Oregon Constitution says. But there's also, I think, what this will do is actually add to the incentive for people to leave the state, because we, everyone out there, knows that what we're talking about with this kind of tax reform is additional taxes. It's that simple. No one, if you went out and polled the people, would believe that we're talking about anything other than taking more dollars out of the pockets of the people of Oregon. And with that, and due to the fact that I served on a committee during the interim that was looking at this same issue and came, and the whole group came to a conclusion, in fact, a governor, former governor, who had actually supported a sales tax and value-added tax, came to the conclusion, that if I understood him right, that in fact he did not support making this adjustment, very regressive type of taxation, particularly value-added. I think that will be the last straw that sends businesses fleeing from the state of Oregon. So I will strongly oppose this and hopefully some of my colleagues will take a look at the concept that's being portrayed in lines 8 and 9.
Thank you. Senator Carter.
Mr. Chairman, if we were to look where we are and how we rate in terms of tax rates, whether they are compared to the way our rates are or whether they're compared to a different kind of mix of taxes, we're number 39 in this state. And the state of Washington, whether they're moving to Clark County or not, it has to be some other reason, because Washington taxes are higher than the state of Oregon taxes. So there are many different reasons why we need to have this conversation. Least of all, it should not be because businesses are moving or because we are getting too much money out of Oregonians' packages, out of their pockets. We have decided in this state that we want a level of services. We want a first-rate school system. We want family wage jobs. And we want to be able to have a clean environment. We want to have safety, and we want to have good control in our justice system. Well, by George, you have to pay for that. And if we don't have the conversation, we'll never know where we are.
Well said, Senator.
By George.
Mr. Chairman, George cannot be bought. George cannot be bought.
I think that might be an unintentional.
Margaret Carter, where are you? This is going to end up on a signing night tape.
Senator Morse, did you want to make a comment?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I don't think I can follow that at all. But to me, there are four basic issues that our state is facing. The first is the volatility of our revenue streams. It's exceedingly volatile, and it throws this state into a crisis, you know, up and down. When the revenues are good, they're very good. When the revenues are bad, they're very bad. And unfortunately, we're going to leave this session without any reserve fund mechanism. We have embedded in the Constitution a kicker that prevents the creation of a rainy day fund. And that, of course, triggers the third component that I think is important. You have volatility, you have the reserve fund issue, and that's the spending issue, is how do we make sure that the state does not spiral upward in its spending. The fourth issue is the unfunded voter initiative. We need to have a thoughtful discussion with the citizens of Oregon with respect to the impact that these initiatives have had, budgeting by initiative, in this state. The calculation that we've done in our analysis over the course of this session is that we're carrying in the general fund, with no change in the tax code at all, in excess of $3.2 billion in unfunded voter initiatives. You overlay that with the $1 billion in the Oregon Health Plan, and you wind up with $4.2 billion of rather exceptional events that the general fund is required to support. I think it's time. It's incumbent upon us to have a thoughtful discussion. If you don't look at these issues, we will just perpetuate the chaos that exists in this state. There may not be solutions that come out of this work group and convening in a special assembly. But we have to try, and I am definitely in support of this resolution.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Messerly and Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just feel compelled to make a statement here this morning. I am not opposed to taking a look at our tax structure and seeing if there's ways that we might make it even stronger. But I had the privilege, just prior to this session, of attending a conference in which there were many states from Western United States present, and we had presentations on many issues, but one of them was our forms of taxation. And what I came away from that meeting realizing was that there are states who are just like we are, dependent on the income tax. There are states such as California which have many legs to their stool, and other states with different forms of revenue sources. It really doesn't make a whole lot of difference what kind of a system you have. What is key is to how you manage your resources, how much ending balance you have, how much reserve you have, and are you managing your state prudently so that you can keep your state solvent. I think in the last several years, Oregon has done a horrible, embarrassingly horrible job of not managing the growth of this state, not managing our programs. Quite frankly, we got caught in a cyclic economy, whether it's high-tech, timber, fisheries, agriculture, whatever, in which we did not plan ahead for the rainy days, and that's very, very unfortunate. Last weekend, my wife and I had the opportunity to drive around some of the rural communities in Coos County, and because we've been up here so much in the last couple of years, I had not had a chance to do that. But I'm talking about small cities, and it was actually shocking to me. It was the Appalachia of the United States. Homes that have not been painted in years, sidewalks with brush and grass growing up through them, homes with trees and berry vines growing over the top of the homes. And many of these homes are occupied. I mean, I'm not talking about just vacant homes. It's really unfortunate that many of the people in this body do not get around the state and see the economies in some of our, probably not only rural Oregon. We've got a lot of people that are really in really tough straits right now. I'm concerned that we have been focusing on taxes this session, but very little effort into the economy of how are we getting people back to work. This state has abundant resources, natural resources, which we're not using. We are not able to get them into our economy. Serving on the Natural Resource Subcommittee, or chairing the Natural Resource Subcommittee for Ways and Means, I'm very much aware of the process, the extremely burdensome process we have in this state, the uncertainty that businesses have. We heard from businesses such as Intel how they can't function in the land use process. They cannot expand, although they want to expand, how very difficult that's been for them. American Bridge, a brand new company from the East Coast that's establishing in Reedsport, Oregon, has made the public comment that had they known a year and a half ago what they know now, they would not have come to Oregon. A huge signal that there's something drastically wrong with what we're doing here in Oregon. Although taxes is a factor, I don't believe it's the biggest factor of why we're seeing our businesses leave Oregon. They simply can't be certain that the investments they make today are going to be a valid investment, a profitable venture, a few months or a very few years down the future. So I think we've got much, much bigger problems than just simply our tax structure. And I'm really frustrated that this body, the leadership of this state, has not focused on that. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All that I was going to say is some people think that some of these ideas are new, and they're actually very old. And even in my short experience here as a legislator, I can remember when I started in 1997, the then chair of the Revenue Committee, Tom Bryan, who's now the chair of the Washington County Commission, would talk to me at times about the frustration of, if you're going to change anything relative to revenue, you usually worked around the edges. You made a few changes here or there, but actually trying to reform the system was extremely difficult. And he actually spent most of that session, as maybe people would recall, rewriting Measure 47 into Measure 50, because the legislature, including myself, and I think I only remember the people that were there with me, and I thought that it had to be rewritten because it was so poorly written that it probably might still be in the courts trying to determine what it meant. But we felt we had to reflect the will of the people, so we developed Measure 50 over the period of that session, and ultimately the voters passed it. But also during that session, something that isn't remembered is people think that these up and down swings in terms of revenue and the economy were something that we just realized in the last biennium. Well, we had put together a rainy day fund measure in that particular session that actually overwhelmingly passed the House. I think it was in the low 40s in terms of vote total. Actually never saw the light of day in the Senate. But people back then recognized that even though the economy was booming, there would be a day when it would not be. I think if we were even still in a good economy, it would be incumbent on us to do something like this, to look at our tax system overall, see if it's doing what we think it should be doing in terms of retaining businesses in the state, actually allowing businesses to expand, in terms of being fair to working families. I don't see any problem with examining the system, and I'm not so sure it's simply an examination simply to look for more revenue. I think it's maybe an examination to look for more stability in revenue, which is probably as big an issue as the level of revenue, because it's hard to plan when you don't know what your revenue is going to be from year to year. So I'm fully in favor of this measure.
Thank you, Senator. Other comments? Senator Dukes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am glad to see this resolution here. Been here for a couple of years, and for about 10 of those, served on the Revenue Committee. And we've tried, and just as Senator Devlin explained, we've nibbled around the edges. 2 years ago, we passed a state law requiring us to spend the interim looking at revenue. And unfortunately, we only fulfilled about half of the requirements of that state law. We have chosen, because this is a very difficult arena, to sidestep it again and again. But I can't imagine that any of us, certainly I haven't, run through an election without having this thrown in our face again and again. When are you going to look at restructuring government? When are you going to look at stable funding? When are you going to look at these issues? And I think that, at least in the forums that I've been in, we've all said this is something we want to do, and then we've proceeded to go into a legislative session and find lots of very difficult issues to deal with and manage to get out without dealing with it. And I just don't know how we can go back through another cycle without dealing with this issue. I agree again with Senator Devlin. This doesn't say we're going to raise taxes. And that may very well be the outcome of it, and then again, it may not. But until we take a look at Oregon's tax structure and all of the other options that are out there, I don't think we've played fair with the voters or with the state of Oregon. So I'm anxious to see this happen.
Senator Herb?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for what it's worth, a caution. I asked the question about whether the governor was on board on this. He's made the statement many, many times, both in public and private, that a thoughtful tax reform discussion is absolutely critical, and I support that 1,000%. Thoughtful discussion is absolutely necessary of what you're attempting to do. But my caution to the legislature is, if this comes from the legislature and it doesn't come from the people, it's going to be 0-10. We need to let the people get together and decide from the bottom up what they want to do. If the legislature does it in this form, I'm concerned that that's two strikes before we get to the plate. I think the process that he has described is probably a legitimate process to have a discussion. I think this process is going to be doomed to failure because it comes from us. It's another, I know more than you know because I am a legislator, and that just doesn't get it. I'm kind of sorry we're taking this MEDAX approach to it, but it's going to go because you guys have the votes, but just a caution and a concern. So.
May I ask a question?
Thank you. Yes, Senator Carter.
Mr. Chair, is it as a result of this pulling together of this group, is that citizen participation?
Absolutely, Senator. I'm not sure I totally disagree with the good Senator from Klamath Falls, and I think the way this is structured is to make sure we have that very public input. There is no prejudging of the outcome in this measure, as you well know. It does not say that there is a specific proposal that we are putting forward. Because I agree with Senator Harper that would probably be inappropriate. I think it is incumbent upon the leadership of this state that is elected by the people of the state to help shape the discussion. Otherwise, it becomes a floundering around of different interests. Everyone's in favor of tax reform. but someone has to help shape that discussion, the discussion that comes from the people.
Number one, and that's why I was asking this question, because I think the Colonel is right along those lines. But number two, if there is citizen participation, is there or has there been any thought in terms of having forums, having some kind of meeting in
Absolutely.
Different communities across
Absolutely.
The state?
That is anticipated in this, absolutely,
okay.
around the state.
Another question?
Yes.
My third question is, is the business community intimately involved with this process?
We have had numerous hearings. Business community has testified in favor of tax reform. We have had a work group, Senate work group, that's actually been a bipartisan, bicameral work group, that the business has been at the table. Business groups have been at the table, and they have been extremely involved in the process to date. And I would certainly hope they would continue to be involved.
And I know while you haven't decided at this point, but is it, well, would you consider, if you've not, making sure that you attend communities in all the sectors, north, south, east, and west of Oregon, in order to have input from citizens?
Absolutely, Senator.
Thank you.
For the comment, we should probably move along because we've got another big bill.
Well, I know we do, but there's some interesting questions that have been asked, and just my light bulb went off because there's one piece, and I know you have pushed or you support the VAT or the, I call it the VAT tax, and I hope that this is not because I don't support it. But I do support the discussion of the issue of a tax structure, and so I need to put that on the record. If that's the direction that you're headed, then that becomes very problematic. And the other piece of it is that Senator Carter raised the issue of business, and I would, for the record, would think that you would want and insist that business is at the table, because part of what we're talking about here is a structure for job creation and to make certain that we do have a climate here in Oregon to keep businesses and to recruit new businesses. So I need to ask you, I see that it's only legislators that are involved. How do you plan, or what's the plan to assure that businesses are at the table?
Well, actually, I'll defer to staff a little bit in terms of, you know, what we're anticipating, but I think we're anticipating exactly what Senator Carter was alluding to, where we would have forums across the state, so there'd be opportunities for citizen input to drive this discussion. Let us know what they think are the biggest problems. That would be small businesses, big businesses, citizens, labor activists, the people that run the gamut of this great state. So we'll have an opportunity, I think, to make sure that everyone is represented. I also point out there is no prejudging. Most of the discussions, frankly, I'll be upfront with everyone, in the work group we've had have gone not along with the VAT approach. That has not been the approach that has seemed to have garnered the most interest in some of the discussions we've had. So I can assure the Senator of that at this stage of the game. Question, Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I always felt that it was important to remember that we respect one another in the House and the Senate, and that we are equal. But yet I see there's 12 members of the House, there's only 8 members of the Senate. What's the reason for that?
Well, actually, Senator, I appreciate that question, because in some of the House proposals, there's only 6 senators. And I took some umbrage at that. I think what they would suggest is that there's twice as many of them as there are of us, so equal representation did not indicate that. But
Chairman, we represent the exact same number of people in the state.
And hence why you see us having at least 8 representatives there.
Well, I believe it should be 12 and 12.
Fair comment.
Just 8 members.
Further comments? I guess I'll just close, if I may, by saying that I think this is an extremely important discussion. I will say that there's no prejudging of the outcome on this. It may or may not come to fruition. I would certainly hope that in the end we would have something to bring to that May 31st session and have it be looked at as a product of the people of the state of Oregon and an opportunity for us as a legislature to do, as I said, our constitutional duty. We are the highest income tax state in the nation. We have the second highest capital gains tax in the nation. I'm not proud of that. That is certainly a disincentive. Every time we come to this assembly, business is telling us, please cut the income tax, please cut the capital gains tax, we need R&D credits, we need this sort of thing. That can only happen as a part of tax reform. That can only happen as a part of tax reform. To give that stuff away would mean there would be no essential services in the state. We would not have a K-12 system that educates anybody. We would not have human services for those people that are trying to get out of welfare and get to work. So we need a system that, frankly, lowers our income taxes in the long run, promotes economic development, diversifies our tax base, makes sure it's not regressive, and in my opinion, has a dedicated source of funding to K-12, because that is a way, I think, to support our children over the long time is something that's eluded us for the last 40 years. I think we have done good work with regard to economic development during this session. I take a little bit of issue with the good senator from Coos Bay. I think we've actually got an economic development department that is being revamped and revised as we speak. Our whole land use system is being revised to look at economic development, industrial growth within the urban growth boundaries. I think that is huge. It's a total new direction. We have a transportation package that has been unequal in the last 50 years for the state of Oregon that puts Oregonians to work and creates jobs. I think this has been a tough, long session, but with this as the capstone, could be one of the greatest sessions in Oregon's legislative history. And I would urge us to move forward and do great things.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
It's going to be the most talked about.
Dash 3 Amendment SJR 34.
Thank you. Dash 3 Amendment has been moved to SJR 34. Is there more discussion? Objection. Senator Harper and Senator George.
Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Move SJR 34 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Carter. SJR 34, as amended, has been moved to the Senate floor with due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Senator Harper, Senator George. Appreciate that. Pass to the floor. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, well, let's turn our attention to the very immediate, what we need to do to close this session down, take care of people. Thank you, Paul.
We had this backwards. You want this thing to fail.
John, look at my shirt.
If you want tax reform, we should fail.
John,
listen.
Oh,
please.
I thought the Tillamook County kind of hiss. Please, Corbin Cows.
Listen, if you see another one, I'll get it and I'll give you the money.
Okay, what size? This is an extra large.
Okay, a large.
A large?
Okay.
You'll be able to do that, Margaret.
Hi, John. Yes.
Yeah.
And the biggest
thing,
you know,
I'll see what I can do.
let's call the special Senate Budget Committee back to order. And we'll have staff lead us through. I think we're going to be using the small one-page sheet. This is actually a pretty simple budget. We got it all on one page for you. to go through, we'll probably go through this in order. Feel free, I guess, to ask questions as you go. I'll make a point of stopping after we go through the emergency board and adjustment section that you see at the top part of the page. And we'll go through the individual budgets. Then we'll go into the disappropriations. And we'll hit the conflict amendments and then the miscellaneous things at the end.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Winter.
Before we get started, I think it would be very nice for us to give a just huge, huge thank you to our staff.
I agree.
Thank you, staff.
Yeah. Appreciate all the work they've done. They were up all day, all last night, night before, all day yesterday. They were actually gung-ho to go. We tired out yesterday evening at about 7 or 7:30. Staff, I'll note, was ready to keep on going, mostly because they wanted us gone, frankly, I think. But they were still willing to work very, very hard. They've had a lot to do this session. I think Senator Wears is right because they've been serving several different masters, several different co-chairs, so to speak, and frankly running not just a Ways and Means process, but a House Budget Committee and a Senate Budget Committee. We haven't had to do that sort of thing since 1993, so I appreciate
it. Mr. Chair, this has been very unusual. They've had 6 special sessions. They had a 7th session to rebalance the budget before they started the regular session, and I just think that they're worthy of not only us but the citizens of the state of Oregon know how hard our staff has worked.
Be careful of Water Ray Center.
Well,
with that, let's have staff start in.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. You have before you the -828 amendments to House Bill 5077. This is the omnibus reconciliation bill that's basically picking up the remaining parts of the state's budget for the 03-05 biennium. What we'd like to do is go through the amendments with you. And we've provided you with a section-by-section analysis, but you also have the amendments for the exact language. Then we also have given you a draft budget report, which we will finalize after the meeting in case there are any changes to it, and staff are still working now on making corrections to it. So, and this would be available, generally available to the public when it goes to the floor this afternoon. The bill is structured in several pieces. There are captions that list the sections of the bill. The first part of the bill is your typical emergency board type appropriations and then adjustments to budgets that have already passed or other kinds of technical changes that we've had to make. Because of budgets have passed and then changes have occurred. So section 1, subsection 1 of the bill is the general purpose emergency fund appropriation of $40 million. Subsection 2 is a special purpose appropriation to the Secretary of State for the special election costs in September. For the pension obligation bond issuance. Section 2 is a special purpose appropriation to the emergency board to pay $9 million towards state agency health benefit changes that were part of the negotiated settlement with the various unions. This is about half of what the projected need was, and that was part of the negotiated budget plan. So in this case, agencies would come through the Department of Administrative Services at some point in the biennium and request allocation of this $9 million. Those are the primary emergency board sections. Starting with Section 3 are adjustments, and these include some add-backs to programs. In Section 3, there are two additions to the Department of Education, $1 million for Oregon pre-kindergarten, and $100,000 for the Smart Reading Program. Section 4 is two add-backs to the Department of Human Services, and that would be $2 million for Oregon Project Independence and $500,000 for independent living centers. Section 5 has $100,000 for the Oregon Council for Knowledge and Economic Development through the Department of Higher Education. Section 6 is $100,000 for the Department of Veterans Affairs for county veterans services, and all of these are general fund appropriations. The next few sections are these more technical fixes that we make. Sections 7 and 8 have other fund limitation for the Department of Justice and the state police, and this is in conjunction with House Bill 2532, which is already passed, but we were unable to put these limitations in that particular bill, so we had to include them here. And this is for additional tobacco compliance task force activities. Section 9 is a technical fix to the long-term care ombudsman budget, where there was additional limitation provided that was not needed, and we're just reducing that that limitation. Sections 10 and 11 are again due to the passage of House Bill 2759, which increased certain court fees, and what we're doing here is backing out the general fund of $6.6 million and increasing the other funds by the same amount so the department can spend those court fees instead of the general fund.
Can I ask a question now? Would you prefer at the end?
Go right ahead, Senator Carter.
In terms of these two in question, OJD, does it limit any further, Mr. Chairman, if you recall, I asked earlier this year that question, how is this going to affect the workings of our court system?
Senator, I believe this just allows things to go forward at this point in time. This is part of the, I believe, the surcharge revenue that was critical to the public safety budget package that we had. There's a lot of talk about a $90 or $85 million public safety budget, when in reality it was more like $113 million,
okay,
given these revenues. So this is critical to making sure that the judicial department gets the revenue it needs, and we promised them in the budget that we set up.
Okay, so we're not disappropriated?
Mr. Chair, Senator Carter, this is all we're doing here is taking the general fund out and replacing it with the same amount of revenue from these from the fees.
Okay. Good question.
Thank
you. It doesn't affect the budget.
Okay.
The overall budget.
Great. Because I was just going to ask you to define backing out versus disappropriation.
Very similar. Sections 12 and 13 are similar to this, but in this case it's for the Oregon Youth Authority, and this is due to the enhanced Medicaid match that the federal government in that $216 million of federal fiscal relief that was provided to Oregon. OYA gets a piece of that, and we're taking out the general fund and replacing it with federal funds in those two sections. Section 14 is additional other funds limitation for DPSST, and this is for construction project management costs related to the new training facility that was omitted in their budget. Sections 15 and 16 are providing additional lottery fund limitation in anticipation of growth in Measure 66 lottery revenues if the assumed revenue package of an additional lottery revenues coming to the state, then the Parks and Recreation Department would also get additional monies from that. And
sure.
This provides $3 million for one section of their bill, which is related to land acquisition, and $3 million for grant programs. And I believe there's a budget note in the budget report, which we will get to later.
Senator Messoy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there is going to be an increase in lottery funds available through ballot measure 66, wouldn't there need to be another adjustment for the OWEB, since they get half of that
appropriators? Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, yes, and they would be able to come to the emergency board if that revenue didn't increase an equivalent amount. Yes.
Okay. And, Mr. Chairman, in line Senator with Carter. That, can I stop being a sore in your leg? In the event the tax that goes to the people failed, is that going to be true of others of these line items?
We can get, why don't we deal with that with the disappropriation? That's a good question to ask, but I think we can cover that in disappropriation section.
Okay.
Sections 17 through 20 provide other fund limitation for the Commission on Asian Affairs, Commission on Black Affairs, Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and Commission for Women. And this is in case those commissions receive gifts, grants, donations, or other fund revenues that they can use that revenue to continue functioning. If they are not able to do that, Section 21 provides a general fund appropriation to the Department of Administrative Services to pay for closing costs of those advocacy commissions. Section 22 is part of the negotiated add-backs for several agencies. This one's $11 million for the Department of Higher Ed, and this is for Education and General Services. Section 23 represents $4 million general fund for the Student Assistance Commission, and this is for financial aid payments to individuals and institutions. Sections 24 and 25 represent a reduction of $5 million general fund to the Department of Higher Education for information technology projects, and Section 25 provides the department with an equivalent amount of proceeds from certificates of participation to be used in lieu of the general fund for these identifiable IT projects. Sections 26 and 27 are tied to House Bill 2148, where there was a transfer of supplemental employment department administrative funds and penalty and interest money to the general fund. And this provides the department with the language that they need to spend the Reed Act money, which is federal dollars, but they spend it as other funds. So then the net there is zero. Section 28 is a other fund limitation for the PERS system, and this is related to costs of implementing the PERS reform bills that were passed by the legislature. And then Section 29 has three components where there is $1 provided of other fund limitation for costs related to a successor plan. If House Bill 2020 passes, there's $1 limitation for operational expenditures, $1 for bond issuance, and $1 for debt service. PERS would need to come to the emergency board to have those increased once we know what the exact costs are. And I believe there's a budget note in the budget report talking about that.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Dukes and Senator Messley.
Just a technical question from me. All of these are listed under emergency board. Does that mean that any of these organizations would need to come to the emergency board in order to claim any money listed here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dukes, actually, no. The only ones that would be the first, actually only the Secretary of State for the $1.5 million, and they would do that after they know what the local, what the county costs are for implementing that election.
So the rest of it, where there are?
There are direct appropriations or changes that will take effect immediately.
Okay, thank you.
Good question. Thank you for that. Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The $40 million for general purpose seems extremely low to me when you look at the economic conditions and all the problems the state has. I assume that there are other ending balances or something that we can rely on. Could you, matter of fact, if we don't have at least $200 to $300 million in some type of reserves, I think we're being extremely irresponsible. Could you explain to us where these reserve funds are, what we're really looking at in total?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, currently the plan that has been developed has an ending balance of $100 million in addition to this $40 million that is in the general purpose emergency fund. There are other mechanisms in place in House Bill 2148 that would allow the Budget and Management Division of Department of Administrative Services and Legislative Fiscal to try to capture savings from agencies that accrue during the biennium based on efficiencies, which could supplement that ending balance. But at this point, there is only $100 million in the ending balance, and that is based on the last forecast that we have.
I would add to that, there's also, however, an effort going on within the Department of Administrative Services to look at how we purchase things here in the state of Oregon that could easily net us a couple hundred million dollars. And that effort is being spearheaded by the administrator and director of that division. So we're trying to capture every spare dime we can, and we'll continue to do that throughout the session. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question to Ken. Does the language that we have allow us to capture those bulk purchasing savings across the myriad of agencies that would be involved?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris, I believe the language in 2148 allows us to capture any kind of savings that accrue to agencies this biennium, yes, from whatever source. And we, in working with BAM, we will try to identify the sources of those for you so that you know whether bulk purchasing is actually resulting in savings. Yes.
I'm sorry.
If I could have a follow-up, Mr. Chair. You mentioned that there's a potential for $200 million in bulk purchasing. Do we have any idea of what some of the other efficiencies we're looking at? And is this in any kind of a work plan or something that we can document that this is an effort that's going on, or is it just in the verbal communication at this point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Mesley, I believe in the House Bill 2148, in House Bill 2148, Section 19, it was listed to include things like restrictions on travel, furniture purchases, memberships, subscriptions, color printing, office moves, information technology investments, meals, meetings, hiring, maintaining vacancies, and personal or professional service contracts and overtime. And that's listed in the bill. And I think probably the greatest source of these savings might come from holding vacancies open longer, and the Department of Administrative Services has issued instructions to agencies to keep all vacancies for at least 30 days unless there's an exception due to health, safety, or welfare of the public. And we anticipate receiving some savings from early retirement or retirement from the PERS changes.
If I may comment, I think this section in 2148 is absolutely critical and one of the great successes of this session, where all the work you on this committee have done during session trying to find efficiencies and make sure there's truth in budgeting, that doesn't end like it usually would in past sessions when we leave town. Because of this section, there will be an opportunity for our staff and the emergency board and legislators, as well as the agencies themselves, to continue to see ways they can improve the delivery of service. So it's very this is one of the more exciting sections, I think, that we actually have in our statute. Senator.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So do we have built into these budgets that they will be reporting back to the e-board periodically so we can keep track of this, or how are we going to provide oversight that this function is actually going on?
If I may, I believe there are two opportunities where the department is going to be reporting to us in the course of this session where these savings would theoretically be put back into our resources for us either to save for ending balance or use as needed throughout the biennium.
Thank you.
Further questions, staff?
Well, Mr. Chair, if you want to move on, the next section of the bill is between sections 30 and 47 is the state school fund budget. And basically this is set at $5.2 billion, and there's additional $100 million available from a trigger that's based on economic growth. And if you, Sue McGlashan is here to go through that if you want to have some more details about how that is structured.
How about we have Sue come on up then, if that's okay?
Not really, since if it doesn't happen, we're back here.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Gordley.
Could you or Sue clarify what is happening with the local option equalization grants? I understand that we need a fix, if you will, to ensure that the state's obligation of matching funds to Pendleton, Colton, Sherman County, and Oakland happens, and outside of this bill.
Right.
Could you talk about the process for moving that forward so we get something on the record?
Sure. That's a good comment. In the course of developing this budget, I think a lot of people assumed that that might be something that was done automatically. That is not something the state has to do automatically. We researched that yesterday with legislative counsel. So it I think inadvertently fell off the table as part of our state school fund allocation this time. What we can do is address that in a separate bill, and I think that's been the interest and direction we're going at this point in time. So it's too late, obviously, to amend this particular bill, but we would have the opportunity to do that in a in another package, hopefully later this afternoon.
Okay, and so that will happen. Mr. Chair, is what you're saying?
Yes, that will be developed.
Thank you.
Sue, would you like to?
Sure, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I've passed out a little cheat sheet for you that shows you what's in the state school fund section, sections 30 through 47 of the amendments. And the chart shows you how you get to the $5.2 billion and the different sources that are included in that 5.2, and then the additional amount of $100 million subject to a trigger, and that's described in sections 37 through 40, and as Ken mentioned, it's based on economic recovery. There are a couple of additional sections in there that provide some technical fixes to 0103, including some supplemental limitation for timber taxes that were unanticipated and need to be distributed for the 02-03 school year. So if there are any questions on the chart that I just handed out, I'd be happy to answer any of those.
Senator Harper.
Could you do that timber tax again? Show me where that is.
Senator Harper, in, let's see, that would be section 44. It provides 0103 supplemental other funds limitation to the Department of Education so that they can distribute those unanticipated timber taxes that they received for the 02-03 school year.
And is this just our own or is this the federal timber money?
This is just local.
Local. Is the federal timber money reference in here any?
It is not, Senator Harper. That's considered part of local revenue and the local revenue projections. It is part of the formula, but it's not in this bill.
All right. So we're still stealing that money from the timber-dependent communities.
Senator Harper, I suppose you could characterize it that way.
I'm sure you wouldn't.
In simple form, basically it's $5.2 billion hard cash allocation to state school fund with a $5 million add-on for small schools that we have been doing for the past, I think, 4 years. And we've got a $100 million economic trigger whereby 50% of all additional general fund, 100% of all lottery fund revenues would, above the close of session forecast, would go towards the last $100 million to get us to the $5.3 billion state school fund allocation.
And
Senator Harper?
And no school improvement fund any place?
That is correct. That is correct.
Absolutely no control over any of this.
One would hope our local school board could do a good job. Yes.
Okay, I got you.
Senator Messerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What impact does the kicker have on the trigger for the $100 million? I'm confused to how that fits and what impact, should there be a kicker, would fit on that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messerly, the kicker is the The triggered amount would be an appropriation in this biennium. The kicker would affect the next biennium. So we would just, if the kicker happens for 05, for the current situation, we would have to pay that to taxpayers in the 05 biennium.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions of staff? If not, Mr. Ocko, let's continue. Thank you.
The next budget in the bill is sections 48 through 52, and this is the Department of Higher Education budget. And this is as it passed out already. And it was just included in this bill just to complete the package to make sure all the budgets were on their way. So there's no changes to this from what had been already adopted by, I believe, the House.
Other than?
By both, actually.
Well, there was an $11 million appropriation, I believe, that was put in.
Well, that is in Section 22 of this current bill. This
right.
would be the add.
Right.
So we left the budget as it had been passed and made the add in Section 22.
Discussion? Continuum then, I guess.
The next budget is the Bureau of Labor and Industries, and this is in Sections 53 through 57. There's a more complete description in the budget report draft that you have. And I would like to point out that the budget report reflects committee discussion, but we've tried to do, knowing that there would be less discussion here than in subcommittees when these were worked in Ways and Means, we've included the Ways and Means subcommittee discussion for committee action in the budget report. Basically, this budget is as it had been discussed, with the addition of the $2.5 million for the apprenticeship program. Sections 58 through 60 is the Office of the Governor budget.
Excuse me, question, Senator Harper.
We had some discussions about a budget note for Boley. Is that in there?
Mr. Chair, I did look. It is in.
It's Senator Morris? It's,
excuse me, Mr. Chair. It is in this document.
All right.
It's in the budget document.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
The next budget is the Office of Governor, and that is found in Sections 58 through 60. The Legislative Branch is found in Sections 61 through 75, and that represents each of the legislative agencies has a section or several sections in that portion. The Secretary of State is in Sections 76 through 80. And the Department of Transportation is in Sections 81 through 86. And Section 85 is where you would find the additional $3.9 million general fund that was identified as part of the negotiated final plan, and that would be for the trains.
Is there anyone want to walk through any of those packages? We have the staff here to do that. Any of the budgets? Most of the budgets, I think, we've... seen before in subcommittee, certainly they've been worked. Boley was, governor's was, secretary of state's was, transportation was. I don't know about the legislative branch, if there's discussions there. I know our leadership has had extensive discussions on that.
Maybe you could walk us through a little bit of what's in the legislative budget.
Okay. Mary, thank you.
Debt service.
Yes. Committee members, the leadership budget for the legislative branch represents a reduction of $16 million from the agency request budget. The essential components of it is that it eliminates 14 of 14 policy packages, provides minimal funding for three. It eliminates funding for a WINGS remodel project that would have been proposed. It eliminates 36 vacant positions and eight filled positions. Carries out reductions in funding to carry out the salary freeze.
What section are we in then, Larry? I'm sorry, Cass.
The sections of the bill that are referenced
61
for you,
through
61
75.
Through 75, which is the six legislative branch agencies. In other respects, it takes care of the salary freeze reductions, elimination of inflation, reduced agency assessments, and carries out other actions that were consistent with other state agency budgets.
Question. What is the $956,700 debt service for?
Chair Schrader and Senator Winters, that is the debt service for 0305 on the hearings room remodel that was approved last interim. The budget report, when you see it, will walk you through each of the agencies, each of the package reductions, totaling, like you said, a little over 16 million. I think 9 of that was from elimination of the policy package funding, and approximately 7 was from base budget reductions.
Mr. Chair, members, if you wanted to look in the budget, if you haven't found it, the budget report narrative on this on the legislative branch starts on page 49.
It's in this document. Senator Morris.
Mr. Chair, question for legislative fiscal. What was behind the governor's assumption in his budget with respect to legislative administration? The rebalance of 03 was $19 million. The governor's recommended budget was $11 million. And we have added back. What was the difference in the assumptions between what this budget has and what the governor's assumptions were?
Chair Schrader and committee members, when the governor made the reductions to the legislative branch budget, he basically took an unspecified reduction of approximately $18.8 million, and he took all of it out of the Leg Administration budget. And so that table reflects that. The legislative leadership plan makes reductions in all 6 budgets. And so the table before you would show that it was an add back from the governor's budget, but it was because it was approximately $18.8 million of an unspecified reduction made in one agency only. And it was only through the legislative leadership definition of a plan that those reductions were spread across 6 agencies. So in that table, you'll see that the budget that's approved for 0305 is slightly less than the 0103 approved budget, I believe.
Senator Carter?
Larry, can you tell me the monthly amount that legislators get?
In terms of?
The monthly amount that each legislator received.
Salary was frozen at approximately $1,283 per month. The interim allowance is for one staff person, and then any per diem allowances that they are individually entitled to based on their committee participation.
Okay. And that $1,200 has been frozen since when?
In the 0103 biennium, there was during special session that there was actually an action taken to disconnect from the formula to maintain that freeze through 0103, and then we passed legislation this session to make sure that it didn't change again. So it's been at least 2 biennium.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I just asked a question because I don't think the public realizes that legislators make less than minimum wage, and that all of you leaders continue to freeze this little $1,200 a month, and the public already think we're making $100,000 a month, $100,000 a year like Congress does. And I just say shame on all of you guys that little $1,200 is not a salary because we use it in constituency work. And shame on all of you guys for making the public think that we have above minimum wage and you're continuously freezing it all the time.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Dukes.
What is the monthly salary for legislative staff?
The monthly salary for
legislative staff?
Well, it varies based on the position description, job classification. Do you have a specific?
Our office staff is what we have a set amount per month during the interim, and what is that set amount?
I believe that it's approximately I think the Legislative Assembly budget, I believe, reduced that. I think it's approximately between $1,500 to $1,800 a month. I think it's approximately $1,500 to $1,800 allowance.
And I'm being picky here because, as much as Senator Carter's information means to us, this one means more to most of us.
Yes.
This is whether or not we can function, and there's a big difference between $1,500 a month and $1,800 a month.
Yeah.
I guess the question would be, was it reduced at all?
No.
It was not reduced.
So it's at $1,800. Is that correct?
More or less, the suggested range.
In the meantime, Senator Gordley.
I want to make sure that Senator Dukes got her answer. We're waiting here.
I think we're trying to stop.
Well, I guess the other observation would be that many of our legislative staff, the folks who work in our offices, do earn a salary that is greater than their legislators.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's one of the points that Senator Dukes is trying to tease out here. Yeah. And I only make the observation as a way of further educating the public about what the dollars are actually and how they get spent. That's just a piece of information I don't know that everyone appreciates.
I think you're right. That's a very good comment. Senator Winters.
Yeah, there's an additional observation. There's been the criticism of some legislators of having to perhaps hire their family members in order to have staffing because of the limited amount of resources that we have to stretch. And it's a reason why individuals, some people won't work for the amount of dollars that we're paying them. And so you have to try to beg and borrow to get people to do that. I do think in some ways it's very short-sighted, and the public needs to know exactly what happens here. The other piece of it is that if we compare even our staffing and our staffing needs with the executive branch of government,
mm-hmm.
we are terribly inadequate.
Absolutely.
And then we wonder why we are dependent upon the executive branch for our information, that we're not doing a good job of vetting, if you will. The information we receive. I just think at some point this body has to be honest with the public as to its needs. And also that we're not Congress. We do not make 100,000, although the public think we are, and we do not have a large staffing pool. And that our staff, if I look at our legislative fiscal staff, mm-hmm. how they've had to work over and double and triple time in order to get us the information that we need. I think we have to be honest and let the public know what's happening in the executive branch of government. legislative branch of government. It's bothersome. And we're moving to a full-time legislature, whether we realize it or not. Some of us have been here almost 12 months.
Sheesh.
But it's true.
Job.
It's true.
I got another job.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Winters makes a great point, and we really need to internalize what she's saying. I mean, some of us have also been around long enough to know that it really was just recently that we all got computers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the computers mm-hmm. that can talk to one another. you know, we're still catching up here with the information age and the need to be professional and the need to be able to hire professional staff. So these are points that we really need to not just talk about, but do something about.
Good comments.
If I may follow up to Senator Dukes' question, yes. There was no reduction made for that. It is the higher number. It's approximately 1,800. I don't have the exact number, but there was no reduction to what was the staff
Thank
allowance.
You.
Good question. Shall we move on then,
Mr. Chair? Then and committee members, the next four sections of the bill are disappropriation sections. Section 87 disappropriates about $85 million from state agencies. There's also about $1.6 million disappropriated of lottery funds, and it includes other fund and federal funds limitation reductions. And these are all due to PERS savings because budgets were constructed assuming a higher PERS rate that that is now in place based on the action of the Assembly in passing PERS reform bills. Sections 88 and 89 are two contingency sections tied to House Bill 2152, which is the revenue package bill. These two sections are constructed, 88 is constructed to disappropriate $792 million if all of House Bill 2152 is referred to the voters and then fails to be passed by the voters. And the 792, as it's shown in the amendment, is spread between the agencies that received add-backs, as you had discussed. For example, you saw how public safety was going to get $85 million added back, and K-12 was going to get $412 million added back from the co-chair level. And these reductions are taken in proportion to the general fund tax value of House Bill 2152. Section 89 does the same similar thing, but it disappropriates $544.6 million in the same manner. But the language there says that if any part of the House Bill 2152 is referred and fails, it includes sections, I believe it's 4 and 5, which are the sections on the income tax assessment, which provides the bulk of the money in that revenue package, is referred, then $544.6 million is disappropriated. And these disappropriations would take effect May 1st of 2004. That's anticipating a referral vote would be set in early February.
Question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Harper.
I am absolutely fascinated by these two sections. Fascinated. The arrogance of this legislature. Yeah. The people that hired us were going to pass something that we think they're going to reject if they're given an opportunity. Why wouldn't we spend the effort to try and do something that we could get agreement on? This is absolutely, I'm just incredulous. We're disappropriating something that we have appropriated because we don't trust our citizens. We spent to no avail an enormous amount of effort trying to get some efficiencies out of government, trying to do some reforms. We have a long list of reform failures in front of us. We have laying on the table 2,000 vacancies. 2,000 vacancies. Vacant. They're not there that we can't seem to extract from the agencies. Why weren't some of these reform mechanisms put in a disappropriation bill? Why weren't some of these efficiencies put in a disappropriation bill? Why are we trying to blackmail our citizens with just a straight proportionate reduction? I'm not looking for an answer.
I'll be glad to give you an answer, Senator, because I take absolute direct contravening opinion on your point.
Yeah.
I think the important thing for us to do is recognize that there may be a desire by the voters not to go forward with this, and they have every right to do that. I think you made a very good point earlier in our discussion on SJR 34 that the people ought to have a right to speak out on this. And I think it's incumbent upon us as legislative leaders to make sure that, should that happen, that we've thought in advance about how to deal with that. And I think the disappropriation is a very thoughtful approach that the legislature is considering. You certainly may vote no, but I think it's very incumbent upon us as legislators, as I said earlier, to exert a little leadership and say, hey, you know, if this doesn't fail, there's a thoughtful way to go about the disappropriation that does not hopefully cripple state government one more time.
Well,
we've been through six special sessions, and I think it just makes all the sense in the world.
I think we have a lot of good ideas out there that don't show up in here. This is just a knee-jerk reaction. Just astounding.
Senator Dukes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With, I think, one exception, these budgets have all been worked through subcommittee. We have a variety of perspectives in this building, all of us similarly elected to represent those perspectives. in the legislature, and I appreciate the fact that you didn't do damage to what the subcommittees did, that this budget reflects what those subcommittee actions were. And quite honestly, Senator, a lot of those things couldn't get out of subcommittee because of those differences of opinions and perspectives that represent 90 of us. So I think there are a lot of ideas out there, and some of them make it and some of them don't, but at least these went through the process. And I, for one, really appreciate that that's what we're seeing here today.
Further comments?
Well,
Senator Moritz.
Yeah, follow up on the process input. This is probably, I don't know, what, 60-70% of the state budget? I don't know about the rest of you, but the first time I saw this was this morning, put together in this fashion. This is as bad a government as we get. This is not a personal. This is not personal. This is professional. Professionally speaking, this is as pathetic as we do. 70% of the state budget that none of you have even seen, none of us on the committee, well, at least I didn't, I can't speak for anybody else, saw until this morning. This is just, it is professionally disgraceful.
Well, I think that's an inappropriate comment, and I would say, since the senator was intimately involved in the shaping of this, that if he has any concern about the failure of the budget, suggests that he might be personally responsible for that also. And actually, I think as staff has pointed out again, aside from the politics and the gamesmanship we're seeing here right now, that this has been the most open, most thoughtful deliberation I think that anyone in the audience and anyone in the state of Oregon has seen. Committees have worked through each and every one of these budgets. Because of the politics that's been played in the building in the last couple months, we've had to put these all in one big package. But there's nothing new here. I think the lack of questions, really, about some of the details of budget is evident of the fact that most everyone on this committee, as on the House side, have already seen all these budgets.
And
all we're doing
is packaging.
Mr. Chairman,
if we had not been broken up, this would have been done with both bodies being present.
It takes courage to move the process forward, and those of us that remain here, I think, exhibit that courage. Senator Devlin and Senator Gordley.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to state for the record that most of the items up here, when you go down through item 29, are items that, with the exception of those last add-backs, that many of us anticipated that were coming. And in the case of those last few add-backs, like to OPI and other things, are things that we would generally favor. And many of us have kept inquiring almost on an hourly basis.
I'm also familiar with
what would those, what those add-backs would be. And when you get down to the budgets themselves, I know that the state school fund had hearings and actually went through. I know that a lot of time was spent on higher education, and we actually passed that budget off the Senate floor. Bureau of Labor and Industries, I believe, came out of subcommittee but has some other problems. Office of Governor came out of the subcommittee and had hearings there. Legislative branch, historically, unfortunately, always comes out in the last minute, and I think it should come out earlier, to be quite honest. Secretary of State had more hearings than I care to mention. And the Department of Transportation, Senator George was here, and others here, Senator Dukes and others, had enormous number of hearings. So I think most of us knew what was going to be in this budget. There might be a few little surprises here or there, but most of this has been known.
Right. Senator Gordley, I believe?
Yes, it is. Senator Gordley.
I was trying to remember who had the question.
Okay. In some ways, I agree with some of what Senator Harper said in this respect. You know, I've been around long enough to have participated in and know what our practice is in doing the work of the people. And much of our practice, in my view, and I'm only repeating what many of you have heard me say earlier, our practices are really dysfunctional. And, you know, I would argue that it isn't a good thing
that we just got the information this morning. And it isn't a good practice that members of the public who are participating with us just got their hands on the warm pieces of paper this morning. This is a process that is supposed to be thoughtful and deliberative, and I believe that it is important that we give ourselves some more time to do that. We're all feeling the pressures in different ways to move the process along, and many people talk about the need to get out of the building, et cetera. But I also think there's the need to do this well and to do it right and to make sure that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, and we're making sure that we are not making mistakes that may lead to some unintended consequences. I think the way that we do this work also, some of it too hurriedly, much of it too hurriedly, is an argument for annual sessions. Why we need annual sessions. Perhaps with a different kind of structure, we might give ourselves more time to be more thorough. You know, I'm not going to argue that some of us knew what was in the details of the various budgets and all of that. Some of us are closer to these pieces than others. Mm-hmm. But my point is that to keep defending the practice as okay, I don't think that's okay. I think our practice is dysfunctional, and I don't mind saying that it is. And I think the way we do this often locks the public out. The hour notice, the 24-hour notice, those are not good practices. It's the way we do it, but just because we do it doesn't make it right. And that's my point.
Very good point. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a technical question or a detailed question. We will have, by May 1st of 2004, made appropriations at this funding level, which is for 10 months out of a 24-month biennium. Wouldn't these disappropriations have to be greater than as we're indicating? Because if we have spent at 10 months at a certain level and you have 14 months then to make up the difference, is my logic, Ken?
No.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morris,
greater impact.
The disappropriations is an attempt just to keep the state in balance. If there's any additional reductions that would need to be made, for example, there's some speculation that if sections 4 and 5 are referred and then other pieces of the section of the bill, that $545 million disappropriation wouldn't be enough. But then at that point, the governor could go in and make an allotment reduction across the board. However, I think the effect of the cut would be greater. You wouldn't need to cut more at that point, but the effect would be greater because you would only have 14 months left in the biennium. So the effect on agencies would be much greater. For example, the cut to K-12 would have to come out of the second year. So you would, in the case of the whole bill being referred, you'd be taking over $400 million out of the school fund budget for the second year of the biennium.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my point. And I wondered if these numbers reflected, in fact, what will happen if they get sufficient votes and it passes.
Be catastrophic. Senator Messer and Senator Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to make a statement before we come to a vote on this. This is a very difficult vote for me, and I'm extremely troubled by what we've done or what we haven't done, I guess, in this budgeting process. It's been a lot of good work. I totally agree. And, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the fairness and the way you've operated throughout this budget. But as I look at the budgets that we're dealing with here and our faith, I guess, that we can structure a different sources of revenue to get us through this, which I think are going to be extremely difficult, if not impossible. But what worries me the most is when I look through this budget, the potential roll-up cost. We can't afford and we have not dealt with that. And as I look through some of these budget categories, there's a tremendous amount of work with efficiencies and some of the things you've talked about, and some of them which we don't have any control over, which is going to be extremely difficult for this body to deal with next session. And I don't know that we've dealt with that effectively in this session, and I think it's going to be a huge hurdle, and it's going to be staring us in the face again come the next session that this body is pulled together. So
I think that's a strong argument for serious look at the first bill we looked at, which is tax reform, because absent that, it will be a high hill for us to climb next session, with many of these revenue sources in the previous bill being, you know, just a couple, 2-3 year type of efforts.
Mr. Chairman, I just, again, I stated it earlier at the beginning of this meeting, I'll state it again. Unless we seriously look at how we're going to get Oregonians to work, a tax restructure is not going to get the job done for us. And that, to me, is not the major, function that this state has to deal with to get us back on track to where we can afford our services.
Good comment. Fair comment. Senator Winters.
And I want to follow up on that, because I do think that this session we did miss some opportunities. We missed some opportunities of actually doing some efficiencies, and there's some great ideas out there. And we did pass Senator Morris's bill, which I think will be very helpful. But I don't think that we can go into the future just totally looking at one piece, and that's tax reform of saving us. I think we have to look at all of government. We have to look at what we think that are necessary and that which is not necessary. And I think we're also going to have to look at in the future, and the roll-up cost is a big issue for all of us. Senator Gordy talked about annual sessions. I think we're at a place with government now that is so complex and comprehensive for us to come in and spend 6 months to solve a budget is impractical. And also, when we're going down two parallel tracks, one is going policy and the other is trying to do a budget, and sometimes they come together and connect and sometimes they do not. I think what you're hearing today from us in this document, hurriedly part of in this document, that even though we as chairs have worked on our piece, we have not had the benefit of working on somebody else's or understanding someone else's part of the budget. And I commend you for the job that you have done to date. But I do think that we have to be thoughtful, and I do think that we have to be a lot more inclusive in trying to get out a package for all the citizens of the state of Oregon. And I just hope that next session that we come in, those of us who will come back, that we actually look at those major comprehensive pieces, and that we're not just continually nibbling around the edges. We desperately need jobs in the state of Oregon. You know, we desperately needed to take what the governor's mantra when he said he wanted to cut through the bureaucratic morass and to make it a lot more easier and a lot more business friendly for businesses to access and get what they need from their government. And I haven't seen a lot of that, quite frankly. I saw some packages, our transportation package. I saw some of the others. But I just think that hopefully next session we really do get about the business at hand. I think we're just all feeling tired right now of 7.5 months of working through all of this. And we hopefully we all can go home soon and say that, you know, we've done our best, but prepare for next time when we're doing more than just a tax reform.
I agree, it's much more than all that. And I think you should look at the glass perhaps as somewhat half full. You've done some great work. Never in Oregon's history have we been as parsimonious or as thoughtful in our look at state government. I'd remind the committee that, you know, up until this particular budget before us, we cut almost $3.5 billion out of our expected expenditures from 0103. And at the end of the day, we will still have spent less than we did at the end of 0103 in this particular budget. And that we have taken our investigation of positions and jobs to a new height here that is actually extremely helpful in framing a discussion for the future. I agree with both the previous commentators that we can and should do a little bit better, and I think, as we alluded to in some of the discussion of the sections of this bill and in 2148, we've set the stage for this legislature to move forward that way. One of the most exciting pieces for me is the whole performance measures. The committee chairs and members of the committee have worked extremely hard in getting that in place by which we can judge performance, help the agencies do the work that they want to do, and I think that's going to be outstanding. I'm really excited about the prospects for the future. We'll require all of your reinvestments next go-round to make sure it all comes to fruition, but I have every bit of faith in each and everyone on this committee and the people of the state to help us do our job here at the state and put people to work and make sure the state moves forward. Senator Devlin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Should move forward, too.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to go away from the lofty language of the last three speakers and ask a technical question. I looked at the actual sections relative to the trigger in terms of the K-12 fund, and I just wanted to ask Mr. Rocco a question just by way of explanation. The kicker, my understanding of those sections reads, the trigger would not trigger unless we were above $100 million over what the end of session was on the June forecast. My question would be, let's say we were at $150 million, because it's kind of hard to read the intertwining of these sections. If we were at $150 million over the forecast, and it's 50% would accrue to K-12, what amount would accrue to K-12? Would it be the amount above $100 million, half of that, or would it be $75 million?
Mr. Chair, Senator Devlin, it would be above the $100 million, half of what is above the $100 million general fund, and it would be all of lottery dollars above the amount already allocated.
Okay, so it would be any lottery funds above the forecast, and it would be 50% general funds above the $100 million.
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, there's just several more, if we can finish up on the sections, and these are Section 90 is a disappropriation of government service charges from agencies due to changes in the Secretary of State and Capital Planning Commission budgets because they assess agencies, and this is the general fund savings from those changes in those budgets. Sections 91 through 95 are conflict amendments to change references in House Bill 5067 that were made on bills that did not survive in that form, so we had to change the reference to a different bill. Sections 96 and 97 are in as a contingency against House Bill 2368 not passing, and this is currently in a conference committee. And this affects the Department of Human Services and the Department of Revenue, and it's related to the Tobacco Compliance Task Force. And this language would just make sure that the right dollars go to the right agency if that bill does not pass. Section 98 is just a statement that the captions that you see in the bill are not part of statutory law. And Section 99 is the emergency clause for the bill.
Further questions for staff? More discussion then? Staff?
Well, Mr. Chair, then I just wanted to point out a couple things in the budget report, which is, as I mentioned, is in draft form. We will be finishing it up after the meeting for the floor session. It's in two pieces. You have the narrative part, and then we have a detailed spreadsheet that's separate. And this also includes a couple of tables that show detail on the disappropriations due to PERS and the Secretary of State changes. There is one correction that we know of already, and it's on page 5. Where there's an other funds increase to the Department of Administrative Services of $180,000, that will be removed. And that's one of the reasons why this is in draft form, because we're still finding things to correct. Page 9, there are two reservations out of the $40 million general purpose appropriation to the E-Fund, and they are listed on page 9. One is $7 million for the Department of Education, and this is due to some questions about maintenance of effort. So if once that determination is made of whether the department needs additional resources for maintenance of effort, they can come to the emergency board for that reservation, and that was part of the agreement that was made. And then there's an additional $35,000 general fund reserve for the legislative revenue officer, and this is for any expenses related to the any type of joint interim committee on tax reform that was, I think we just discussed in Senate Joint Resolution 34.
Mr. Chair.
Question, Senator Winters.
Just to put on the record, and I know this is draft, but in our piece, there is a piece that was in my budget that had limited medical durable equipment, and we didn't know what limited meant. And as a result of that, I've asked the agency and the association to get together to work through that definition and also to work through any savings that they may be able to come up with to assure that we're not eliminating folks who needed walkers and what have you. So I needed to put that on record because in our haste of getting all this done, that budget note was not put in.
So is that, Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, is that possible to be added in?
I don't think the design is probably pretty well frozen right in the budget, but I think with that direction we can try and work through that, give them the opportunity to come to the emergency board, that sort of thing.
Yeah, because, Mr. Chairman, it wouldn't do any good if a person goes in for an emergency, an elderly person goes in for an emergency, and they are not mobile and don't have walkers or whatever it is that they need to walk. Yeah, thank
good
you.
Both senators, thank you.
Mr. Chair, the other thing I wanted to point out is on page 43 is the budget note that Senator Morris was referring to on the Bureau of Labor and Industries. The adjustments to the approved budgets are all identified beginning on page 63 of the budget report. And this are these the add backs, the $1 million for Oregon Pre-K, $100,000 for the SMART program, and it goes through and lists all of those in that beginning on that page. There are also several budget notes included in that section of the bill, of the budget report.
Further questions, concerns? We've had a great discussion here, very productive discussion, I feel. If not, the chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Carter.
I move the -828 amendments to House Bill 5077.
Is there further discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, move 5077 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, so ordered. I'd like to thank the committee for their great work in very difficult circumstances. I try and be an optimist. We've got a lot of work to do in the future. I look forward to having each and every one of you back to help us with that work. And I really do appreciate staff. They've done a tremendous job this session. Like I've never seen before, they always rise to the occasion, and I'm very pleased to serve with them and serve with each and every one of you. Thank you so much. Also, our legislative council people, they also worked all night and all day last 3 days to make this. Senator Morris?
Mr. Chairman, what do we have ahead of us?
I would think this might be the denouement of this particular committee. This is a particular problem. So I've enjoyed it.
I've enjoyed this committee.
Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Oh.